It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel. All at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this edition of the RTC Weekly Download, where we're going to feature a special for Halloween. This is the Halloween Trilogy. This was done by the radio enthusiasts of Puget Sound recently. And it features, of course, three shows. First, Mark of the Beast. And second, The Canterville Ghost. And finally, the cast of Amandado. And now, a Halloween Trilogy.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Strickland and I, after I'd left the regiment, so I was surprised to receive an invitation to his wedding. It's not until later that evening at the banquet, however, that the memories of our horrifying experience together came flooding back.
Yes.
At the center of the banquet table was a roasted calf, its glazed eyes retaining the last anguished recognition of its own demise.
Excellent.
Yes, this chef placed a long, sharp knife against the calf's neck, and in a single stroke, the head fell neatly from the torso, oozing rivulets of blood onto the white tablecloth. And all the while, its sad eyes stared at me.
Ooh, yes.
It was then I felt Strickland's gaze from across the room. His face was ashen, his hands trembling, and the look of a man wrestling an inner demon. Of course, I knew just what he was thinking. The monkey god, and how its eyes glowed red in the split second before the leper pounced. Oh, but I'm getting ahead of myself. My story begins 7 years ago in India, the Punjab. It was New Year's Eve, and we were pissed. Strickland was a decent enough chap, but fleet. An unassuming little man was a beastly drunk. Why we suffered his company, I shall never know. That night, that fateful night, we decided to take a shortcut through a hideous part of town populated by untouchables.
Great gods, that Hindu stinks everywhere. It's a running sewer. Oh, and listen to that caterwauling. What say we go unwind some turbans, eh? Rub a few bald heads.
Not a good idea, Fleet. It's a special night for them. Something about their monkey god.
Where's your backbone, man? Your British pride, eh? Secret midnight ceremonies to monkey gods. It's the 19th century, for God's sake.
But sheesh.
Push off, you ignorant mongoose.
Oh, easy on, Fleet. Let's get back to my place and sleep it off.
I'm going to give them an offering they won't forget.
The temple, 50 yards away, was a ruin of stone columns open to the moonlight and the jungle.
Out of the way, priesty. I've got an offering to make.
Pete, come back here now.
Fleet knocked the priest aside and marched up to a large altar in the middle of the temple where sat a great stone monkey. The ceremony was already in progress. The zealots were the most wretched human beings imaginable. Yet their chanting was hypnotic. Of course, Fleet was oblivious to anything but his own rage.
Look at yourselves! Grown men in diapers bowing before a stern monkey! makes me sick.
Pleat!
Ah, bugger off!
You're acting the Great White Hunter.
Oh! Ah-ha! Capital idea!
What are you doing? Oh, my God!
Fleet had shot one of the little baby monkeys preening itself at the base of the sacred idol. Pieces of monkey brain splattered the congregation. Before Fleet could cock his pistol again, the priest wrestled it from him.
You have defiled temple! Offended the monkey god! Go!
No one tells me what to do!
Please, stop!
And that fool bounded up the altar steps, took the lit cigar from his mouth, and snuffed it out right in the center of the monkey god's forehead.
That's what I think of your monkey gods.
Well, we were horrified.
Look, Fleet, look at the statue's eyes.
The eyes of the stone monkey began to glow like hell's rubies. Yet before we could fathom the significance, a man dropped from a tree above. A leper he was, wearing but a loincloth over his ashy skin, his feet toeless, his hands stumps, a blackened gash where the nose once was, and a gaping hole for a mouth. He let out the most blood-curdling scream. Grabbed a Fleet and plunged his silver daggered teeth into Fleet's chest.
Ah, oh, my God! He's bitten me! He sunk his teeth into my heart! Ow.
Blood spurted at an awesome rate. Fleet staggered toward us, then fainted in our arms.
Grab his legs, Hughes, and let's get the hell out of here!
Oh, we ran like hell from that temple, shifting Fleet's body between us as best we could. When we were certain we were not being followed, we set him down a moment to collect our thoughts. His bleeding is slowed, but a strange brownish froth had begun to ooze from his nose and mouth.
This is beyond anything I've ever seen. He needs professional help.
We carried Fleet to Dr. Weiss, an expatriate who lived across the river.
Damned unfriendly hour to treat a madman.
He's delirious. Don't you have something to calm him?
Twice used an old age remedy. He punched Fleet in the jaw, knocking him out cold.
I say, that's not very doctorly.
Quicker than morphine. Quit his shirt off. In a fight, was he?
We disabused him of that notion and told him the tale of the temple and the leper and the bite.
Good God.
No nose, no lips, no fingers.
No lips, but a full set of sharp teeth. Gentlemen, this is no leper bite. This is the mark of the beast.
We looked at him in total ignorance. What did he mean? The mark of the beast. We then watched as Weiss prepared an ointment of alcohol and camphor. When he poured it on the wound, the bubbling and searing jolted Flea back to consciousness.
I'm hungry. I want to eat.
Hungry? We looked at him agog, not knowing what to say. Hungry? At that moment, the good doctor's cat crossed the threshold into the room. Fleet flung himself on the hapless creature with ravenous abandon.
What are you doing? What are you doing to my cat?
In seconds, Fleet beat open the poor creature's throat, then turned it upside down, and with the nail of his index finger, unzipped the cat's belly and feasted on his innards.
Oh,
Oh, my God. My God. My God, what's to be done?
Only thing now is to restrain him. I'll get some rope.
He's a red officer in Her Majesty's regiment.
You mean he was?
Still is. Pete's a good man, if he stays away from the drink.
Are you crazy? Listen, you twit. Whoever he was is gone now. I say we truss him up and sit tight. And maybe, just maybe, he'll survive till morning.
How dare you!
Shut up! And do as I say. Our lives depend on it.
We waited till Fleet had finished dining before luring him to sit in a large chair in the center of the room.
Young cat, tasty, tasty, raw bread, blood, salty, delicious. Ah, there's nothing better than the cat.
While Fleet spoke of exotic cuisines, Vice bound him tightly to the chair.
These ropes will hold a gorilla.
Just then, a howl pierced the night. It came from the jungle. It came from all around us.
March, Nell, bar the door. Fasten the windows. There's no time to lose.
We went about our task with deliberate speed, conscious of the ever-growing danger. And just as we finished securing the house...
Look at him. Look at his face. It's covered in fur. And those yellow eyes.
Listen. Listen. Do you hear? They're coming.
Who's coming?
Heavy feral beast within 100 miles. He's possessed. They want him.
We stand by our man.
Use your brain, Strickland. Look at his face. What's he remind you of? A puma? A leopard, maybe? But certainly not a man.
I'm not leaving him like this. Hughes, give me your knife.
Strickland, cut the ropes. Fleet, oh, what was left of Fleet, just sat there, his eyes fixed on the front door. The howls and shrieks all around us, how were deafening! We made a dash to a large closet in the bedroom, just as the front door burst open and the horrors of the night entered. At dawn, we emerged from our hiding place to find the room a shambles. Fleet was gone. Only shreds of his clothing littered the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, a toast to Captain Strickland, loyal subject of our Empress Queen. Hip, hip!
Hurrah!
And now perhaps the good captain will regale us with tales of conquering the heathen.
I don't really care to burden you with my experiences in India, especially as my feelings towards the heathen, as you call them, have changed. Man's beliefs, his rituals, religious or otherwise, are frankly his own business, not England's, and not mine.
I say.
Strickland and I looked at each other and raised our glasses in a silent toast. I saw in his face my own haunted fear. Pleat disappeared into the night with the raving beasts. But who's to say that we too, Strickland and I, do not carry our own mark of the beast? Vice disappeared last year without a trace. And every day, wherever I look, the beast is all around me.
Thank you.
experience of ghosts is not of wispy-haired phantoms, withered of limb and toothless. Oh, no. The ghost I once knew was tall, dark, and handsome. A dashing figure to a young girl of 17. We'd come from the hustle and bustle of New York City to the lush, idyllic countryside of England. Father had purchased a wonderful estate just outside of London. My younger brother and I were enthralled at the prospect of having stables and a lake. But most of all, we were enthralled at...
All right, everyone. You can open your eyes.
Oh, Father, it's beautiful. It's the most beautiful castle I've ever seen. It's enchanting, Hiram.
I want to explore it.
You can explore everything in the morning. It's past bedtime for both of you.
I'm not a little girl, Father.
You'll always be my little girl, darling.
Oh, what your father meant to say is that you're a lovely young woman and you need your sleep. Didn't you, darling?
Thank you, Lucretia. You say just what I mean. All right, now listen, everyone. Before we get out of the carriage, I just want to tell you I got Canterville Castle for a song because the place is haunted by a ghost. So there.
A ghost! Hooray!
Shh, quiet, Washington. It seemed all so romantic, and even though I knew Father was teasing, I found myself really wishing there might really be a ghost. As the carriage came to a stop, an elderly gentleman stepped out to greet us.
Welcome to Canterville Chase. Here's your deed. You now have full possession of the castle. Lock, stock, and ghost.
My dear man, if we find a ghost, I'll whisk him back to the States and put him on tour with P.T. Barnum.
Just then, Mrs. Umney, a cheerful, bustling woman, came out to fetch us.
Oh, well, bless me now. You all arrived safe and sound. Oh, come in, come in. I've got supper waiting and your beds have been turned down.
Oh, thank you. You must be the housekeeper.
Yes, ma'am, the only housekeeper, and no one else will stay. Well, castle's haunted, I'm sure you've heard. Well, come in, come in.
Mrs. Umney had prepared a delightful supper in the library, but just as we sat down, Mother noticed a large spot on the carpet next to the fireplace.
Oh, my! What's that?
That? Well, well. It will be blood, Mum. Eleanor de Canterville, killed dead on that spot by her husband Simon in 1575.
Well, that will never do. Can't have bloodstains on the carpet.
Mother, I can get the stain out.
Really?
Yeah, and in a jiff, too, with Pinkerton's agitating detergent.
Ah, good thinking, my boy. Be prepared, that's what I say.
Just as Washington finished scrubbing away the spot.
There, Mother, just like new.
A most unusual thing happened.
Mrs. Umney seems to have fainted.
What a shame. I was about to offer her a raise.
How does 20 additional pounds a year sound, Mrs. Umney?
Oh, that'll be lovely, sir. Oh, what with the ghost and all. Well, I best push off. Don't like staying in the house past 8 o'clock. Remember, prop a big chair against your jaw before you go to sleep. Oh, and I'll be back in the morning. And thank you, sir, for the rise.
Later that night...
Hiram, you're snoring again.
What did you say?
Dream more quietly, darling.
But I wasn't dreaming. I was thinking of... Well. What do you know? I think we're being visited. The old boy's making his rounds. Ooh. Now, see here. You've awakened my wife, sir. And she's awakened me. And that will never do. About the castle, interrupting our sleep. Now, I have something that might be of benefit to you. It's a product of good old American know-how. Sidewinder's oil, it is. Now, squirt here, squirt there,
and you'll be able to clank down the halls in a more knightly fashion. I'll leave the bottle on the banister. Nighty-night.
Yeah. And by the way, I think you're overdoing the moaning bit. Just a friendly suggestion.
The next morning at breakfast, the conversation was all about the ghost.
Oh, he shook and he rattled, but I told him in no uncertain terms what I expected.
Very brave, Hiram, but you have to admit, Sir Simon was too young and far too handsome to be really frightening.
Oh, Mother, was he really handsome?
Oh, yes, dear. Now, go outside and explore.
Virginia's so young. I hope this ghost business doesn't frighten her.
Darling, she's older than you think.
That night after dinner, everyone retired to their bedrooms, except me. I hid in a little closet just off the landing, right at the stroke of midnight.
Rise, cankerous scabs of humanity, or I'll snatch you from your downy sleep, attach you to my steed's withers, and drag you down the steps. Ooh. Washington Otis Anderson, present your rotted carcass.
Here I am, Sir Simon. But look at you. That costume is just plain silly. No one's afraid of knights in armor anymore. And you better not come after me, because I'm really good with this pea shooter. Gotcha.
Ooh.
See? Right through the holes in your helmet.
Ooh.
Want a pillow fight?
Why, you pestilent little runt. Your days are numbered.
On the contrary, Sir Simon. Your days are numbered. Now get out of here and take your tin cans with you.
They were so mean to him. When he ran away, I followed him high up into the part of a castle I'd never visited. I found him sitting by a window in a small room under the eaves, sobbing and sobbing. He was the handsomest man I'd ever seen. Sir Simon? I didn't mean to frighten you.
Prevaricator! The entire uncouth family means to frighten me. And you're trespassing. This is my room.
My family is not uncouth. Well, maybe Washington a little. But he's a boy. Perhaps if you were less noisy, you'd be treated better.
You presume to tell me how a ghost should behave? I know every rule of ghosthood. After all, I've been at it 300 years.
Father says you have a very unconvincing groan. Do you mind? May I hear you groan?
No, I couldn't.
Please?
No, really. Oh, well. Put me on the spot. All right. Oh, even you.
He was so very sad, I couldn't help but pat his hand.
No one has comforted me in a very long time. 325 years, to be exact.
That must be very lonely.
Yes, it is. But worse than the loneliness, so very tired. You won't tell anyone I admitted this, will you?
Cross my heart and hope to die.
Oh, you're far too young and too beautiful to die. But as for me, I was a very wicked man. I murdered my wife.
I'm sure you're very, very sorry for it.
I have despised myself for 3 centuries.
That is such a long time without arrest.
It's a ghost life to remain forever unchanged, alone. Oh, dear Virginia, I would like nothing better than to sleep and dream. But I'm afraid I'm forced to live on, repenting for all eternity.
And so the hours flashed by as roses in autumn. He poured out his heart and I mine. And as the crystal moon rose, he whispered the saddest words to me.
I want to die.
Well, Sir Simon, I don't want you to die. But I do want you to find peace.
It is said that even a ghost may die if one truly good person pardons him, even for a moment.
It was easy to pardon him, for I loved him. I told him so, and he bowed low, kissing my hand. Winds began to blow. And we descended into a dark, lonely tunnel where appeared the most frightening creatures. At last we came upon two giant black doors, death's doors. Suddenly, the doors were flung open, and there stood the angel of death, opal-winged, with eyes bright as suns. I sank to my knees in prayer.
So, you have come at last, Simon de Canterville. Your escort is pure of heart, and I see that she pardons you.
Have mercy on his soul.
It is done, child. Now, I bid you both enter.
No, she must be allowed to return to the living.
No one who sets eyes on the angel of death returns.
No, Virginia must be the exception.
And he moved toward the angel and whispered words in his ear I could not hear. The angel relented. Sir Simon then pulled me up into his arms and kissed me. The next thing I knew, my family was all about me.
Virginia!
Oh, darling, you gave us such a scare. Sir Simon will haunt us no more, Father.
What great secrets have you witnessed, child?
God has forgiven Sir Simon at long last for his terrible sin. And, Father, I am no longer a child.
Indeed not. I see that with my own eyes.
Days later, on the most beautiful hillside, we laid Sir Simon to rest. We lowered his coffin into the earth under a large tree where the grass grew long, the moon shone bright, and the nightingales sang. Peace at last. The following spring, I married the young Duke of Cheshire. I was very happy. My husband and I stayed on in the castle and watched our children grow. Though I've traveled the continents, I've always returned to Canterville Castle because it is there that I find the greatest contentment. Sometimes, when I'm alone in that secret turret room, I wish that Sir Simon would make one last visit. I want to tell him what it was like walking back through the doors of death and to thank him for giving me the greatest of gifts. Living and loving. But I suppose that soon enough, I'll be able to deliver those words of gratitude to my dear, dear ghost.
revenge. Sweeter than wine, more alluring than gold, more consoling than love. Vengeance will be mine this very night. Vengeance against someone I hate, I hate, I hate with every fiber of my being, who has heaped ruin on my family and impoverished the great Venetian house of Montresor, come to an end. And every offense, humiliation, and outrage I've registered in my memory's ledger will be accounted for by the most depraved liar and cheat, that foulest fool, that despicable. I will have him tonight. Fortunato, the jolliest wine merchant in Venice. Not an hour ago, I ferried him to San Polo.
Si, signore. He is the most generous of men. This evening he paid me a fistful of gold. My family prays for him daily. He is an angel.
What good fortune indeed. Is he not a wonderful fellow?
Si, signore. Oh! Your stop, signore. Campo San Paolo.
Yeah, an angel. Not quite yet.
Yes. Your stop, signore. Campo San Paolo.
Here's something for your labor, signore.
Grazie. May the Lord keep your soul safe.
The Lord can keep my soul as long as he pleases. I have no need of it. Look who approaches, and with one of the most painted horrors in the city. Fortunato, is that you? Well, the clever costume, the fool.
Montresor! What a surprise. Caramella, may I present my friend?
Buonasera, signore.
Your great, dear friend.
Yes, true. We have done much business in the past. Our grandfathers worked together. I worked with Montresor's father and also did some business with his son and his wife.
Alas, my dear wife.
Yes, it is so sad. Signore, Montresor's wife is dead. And now that I think of it, so is his whole family.
Oh, dear, I will pray for them.
Oh, you are the kindest woman in Venice, Caramella. And I am. Am I not fortunate, Montresor?
Indeed. That is to stay in all but one matter. Oh, if only I had known you would be here tonight. You see, several casks of Amontillado have recently come into my possession.
Amontillado? Well, how could you afford such luxury?
And wishing to verify that sherry's purity, well, naturally, I would have approached you first, but you are always so busy. So I'm on my way this night to find Lucchesi.
Lucchesi? He couldn't tell Amontillado from canal water. I am the man with the golden tongue, the greatest vendor of wines in Venice.
Well, do I know. But I could not think of interrupting your revels.
Oh, nonsense, my friend. We will go straight away. Where do you store the Amontillado?
At my palazzo.
All right, to your vaults then, without delay.
But you said we'd go dancing.
Yes, Fortunato, this beautiful lady mustn't be disappointed. And I fear the dampness might affect her lungs.
Oh, no. The Amontillado will warm my bellows. Avanti! Wait for me at the bridge, Caramella.
Si, mi amore.
Avanti!
I made sure nobody followed as we hastened to my palazzo. All the while, I felt a giddy urge to push the damnable Fortunato into the canal. But drowning a man who cannot swim would hardly be as pleasurable as what I had in store for him. A mere drowning could not avenge my father's death. My father, whose heart stopped when the heartless Fortunato tore up the deed to our winery and spat in his face. The iniquity. At last, we arrived at my home. I fumbled with the keys. Such was my state. And as the great door opened...
Oh, dear Lord. What is that pestilent smell? I don't think I can bear it.
Oh, but you must. The Amontillado awakes. Truth be told, I could barely tolerate the stench myself. We continued down the ever-narrowing tunnel. The walls are slick and clammy as toads' bellies.
The stench, it's suffocating me.
Oh, surely not suffocating you. Oh, now, come on, not much farther. The Amontillado.
Oh, don't pull me, Montresor. I might fall. God knows what's underfoot.
Yes, God knows. Down and still down we climbed, him coughing and gasping, our feet slipping among slugs and worms and the excrement of vermin. Finally, our torches dimmed for lack of oxygen.
Where's the damned Amontillado?
Soon.
I cannot go another step. I will die.
My friend, you underestimate your strength. Only a little farther, I promise. Yeah, here is a bottle of claret that will fortify you. Yeah, drink, go on. That's good. Excellent. Yes, you drink up, my dear friend. That's it. Drink the whole thing. That's good. Now, to the Amontillado. A few more yards.
What? What is all this crunching? What are we stepping on? Bones? My God, Montresor. They look like the bones of human skeletons.
Yes, my family. These walls contain hundreds of relatives. So good to be surrounded by family.
So good? Your grandfather was a naive fool who paid for wine and got vinegar. He was the first Montresor to squander your fortune.
Yes, I know. He was a poor businessman. It was difficult at that moment not to take the jagged claret bottle and rip open his carotid. I could have sunk my teeth into his fat, putrid flesh, but... Surely, you do not mean to impugn my family.
Oh, but I do, Montresor. Your father was swindled even more times than his father. He had a positive talent for poverty. A genius.
To suspend him over a sharpened pike or disembowel him, I would eat his intestines as he watched.
Oh, but your son, the only Montresor with brains? And what did he do? He bled your family of its last lira. And you what? I feel for you, Montresor. I pity you, every member of your aristocratic family. My torch is guttering. It's time to go back. My whore is waiting.
We have just arrived, Fortunato. We are here just in time.
I can't see a thing.
At last, we had reached the tiny alcove where some rusted manacles still held fast to the stone wall. Come, see, Fortunato. Look what I have found. I giggled with insane joy, and Fortunato, ignorant of his fate, joined me in my mirth.
This? What is this at the end of the tunnel?
Is this a torture room? Ah, with irons. Ooh, 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 frightening. Terrifying. I am shaking with fear, Montresor.
I slipped my hands and feet into the shackles, giggling all the while like a boy. Try them yourself, Fortunato. Can you imagine the torture suffered here?
Hellish, diabolic.
Well, try the shackles. I lock you in. See? I've got the key. A perfect fit.
Ow! Ow, ow, ow. You pinch my wrist there. Easy. I love it. Jazz, no. Loosen me a bit, will you? Where are you going?
Yeah, fetching the Amontillado. Yes, 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 my friend. I only go for tools.
Ah, excellent. Only let me out first. What have you got there?
They are stones, my good friend. Ancient as time, older than the bones on which you stand. And mortar to hold them in place.
Stones? Mortars? What are you doing?
I should think that would be apparent. I am breaking you up. I am to squeeze the life's breath from you, you perfidious liar. You fat braggart, you thief, the spoiler of my family.
Ever the jester, eh, Montresor? You know how to extend the game, but I think maybe it's time
That was for my grandfather.
Surely you don't hold me responsible for something that occurred 20 years ago. But your grandfather was more of a philanthropist. That's it. Generous to a fault. Now, what say we stop this game? Huh?
This stone is for my father. A prince among men.
Yes, yes, he was. He was indeed. I remember the time when I was a boy. He patted me on my head one day for no reason. Please, Montresor, come to your senses.
Oh, my senses are tingling. I've never been more aware of joy than right now, imagining you decomposing over the next weeks and months before my very eyes.
No! I will give you gold. Rubies!
For my only son, blameless, loving, who died because of you!
Oh, please. Yeah, he's so close. I beg you. I will do anything. Anything. Please help me.
I am helping you. Helping you along in your pilgrimage to hell. And may I say, the work is exhilarating. Scream for me now. Oh, that was very convincing.
Better.
Now. Rest, my friend. For I think it will be a very long night. I left an opening in the wall, and before the last stone was in place, I thrust in my torch.
Please forgive me. Please have mercy.
Peccato! I'm short on mercy at the moment. Alas, before the dawn of the following day, I placed my ear against the opening, just in time to hear a little death rattle that signaled the end of my sweet revenge. It was followed by the most foul of odors. With napkin around my nose, I plastered the final stone into position. And then arranged the bones of the family Montresor in front of my dearest friend's tomb. It was done. In pace resi quat. Rest in peace.
you. Thank you so much.
For more information about reps, you can check them out at repsonline.org. Well, that's it for this program. We'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio. I hope you can join us. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.